Welcome back to Preps KC's Football Friday Night, driven by the McCarthy Auto Group. I'm your host, Dion Clisso, joined as always by the coach, Harold Walmsgans. And a program like this wouldn't be possible without a great sponsor like KFC. Go to KFC for all your catering needs. If you've got a hungry team, and I know there's a lot of hungry teams out there, several nights a week, they get meals, pregame meals, Thursday night meals, Saturday meals. Go to KFC and they can get your meal situation taken care of for you. Booster Club, all those kind of things. Contact Brian, B-R-I-A-N, at PrepsKC.com to find out more information on that. Let's go ahead and get back into football and bring in our own Nick McCabe. And Nick, last year we titled the segment, I Got Issues with Nick. I was trying to come up with something funny to go with KFC, or Nick likes some chicken or something like that. I don't know what you want to do if you like the I've Got Issues. But it's been really kind of fun. Last year we just talked about general issues in the game. And you know, last time we talked to you, we were talking about Simone Awards, and those were coming up. And, of course, Julian Ross, outstanding season, another great set of awards this year. And we've already been meeting again. And I really, having been on the Simone committee, not just the media committee, this last year, really was fun to me to kind of get the inside and the nuts and bolts and see how that group is, I know, evolved as time has gone on, as it's gotten younger, and the older people have kind of let the kids take over and do that kind of stuff. It's fun to see, and it's great to have that impact of the veteran Simone members and also some of the newer ones as well. And you've been a part of it for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And Anthony Simone, he's not actually technically a junior, which is a lot of times surprising, but we call him Big Anthony and Little Anthony, and Big Anthony is the one who, you know, whose child was lost so many years ago, and they founded this award named after Tommy, who passed away, and Anthony, Little Anthony, wasn't even born yet, but still, you know, I think feels kind of the legacy of his brother, and has now moved into really taking more of a leadership responsibility for this particular award, and I think it's great that the kind of the next generation is really stepping up, and Big Anthony's still very involved and comes to all the meetings and such, but Little Anthony and Charlie, his other brother, are really kind of leading the way on some of these you know, the future going forward with the Simone Awards, and trying to make it bigger and better every year.
When you look at the list of past year's winners, if you're a football fanatic of high school in the greater Kansas City metro, you sure are able to have lots of flashbacks of great players and great people, and it's just amazing the guys whose names are on that list of past winners.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are former NFL stars. There's a current NFL star. You know, that you got some guys that have really gone on to have impactful careers at levels beyond just high school. And then there's, you know, even the guys that didn't do that were obviously great high school football players and have made their mark and are in the discussion for, you know, for greatest high school football players ever in our region. I laugh, you know, Dion, we've been doing this a long time, and Coach has been around the game forever. And I was just joking to somebody that I can remember, you know, who the running back was for 2001 Olathe North team easier than I can remember my friends' kids' names. And that's absolutely the case. You know, you kind of go back, and it's fun sometimes to talk shop over a drink or something and remember some of those great names in years past. And the greatest of those names are guys that have had their names etched on that trophy.
Well, and you look at the other awards too. You know, Elijah Lee was a two-time Buchanan Award winner, was drafted this year. You know, Evan Bame is in the NFL as well. You got Braden Smith, yeah, who I'm assuming is going to be in the NFL here pretty soon, and he never even won it. He was just a finalist three times, and you know, he was in that finalist
had
group.
The unfortunate circumstance of being in the same class as Evan.
Yeah, and Evan, and then Elijah Lee. I mean, I think he was back to back two guys. That says something right there when you're
right. He was a year younger than Evan.
Yeah, and so you're in a run there where you've got Elijah Lee and two NFL guys in front of you, and you're probably going to be an NFLer too. So you know, those other awards are really, you see guys go on and do great things, and it's a lot of fun, and it's a great way to wrap up the season, and it's also fun to, as we kick off this year and we go into it. And I know you and I have talked about, you know, even getting an earlier start on things and trying, you know, identify those guys. You know, I saw Robert Rowey at the Lee Summit Jamboree, and I know there's a lot of high hopes for him and Mario Goodrich at Lee Summit West. I mean, there's some players out there, and you know, Blue Springs has got seven running backs and a couple quarterbacks, and they got so many players. I don't know if one of them could win it because I think they're going to be so balanced. You know, then you talk about receivers, and you know, Blue Springs South's got Swanigan, who's a really good receiver, and you know, just great players. Carter Putz at Bishop Miege, I saw him this week, and it's fun as we turn the page to look at those new players and see how it's going.
Yeah, absolutely. There was, you know, once again, a great list of juniors that were, you know, considered, and those guys are always at kind of the top of the list when you look at who some of the favorites are the following year. But, you know, a lot of times a guy kind of comes off the radar. And in fact, I would say at least half the time a guy comes off the radar. You know, sometimes you have a Drew Locke or a Skylar Thompson that were kind of leaders in the clubhouse for most of the year or all of the year. But then sometimes you have a guy like Julian Ross last year who probably wasn't on a lot of you know, personal watch lists for the Simone Award at the start of the year and had a great, great season and ended up winning it. And so it's hard to tell, you know, if we're going to have one of those guys that that we talked about, we knew a little bit about last year, or if it's going to be a guy that that, you know, maybe had a good season, you know, maybe ran for 800 yards last year, but isn't a guy that you go, oh, he's going to be a Simone guy, but he breaks out for 2,000 this year. You just never know what's going to happen, and it's always fun to watch and find out. And I think you know, we'll have a decent idea of the field kind of shaking out, but it's going to take a few weeks. And you know, the thing is Missouri starts earlier, so we get a little head start on knowing what's going to be like on the Missouri side, but the Kansas side will still be in the dark for a little longer. So, you know, those guys like Carter Putz and, you know, whoever steps up at Blue Valley and some of the other powerhouses over there, you know, we don't know necessarily who those guys will be for a little bit longer, but it'll be fun to watch it shake out.
I think that's a credit to the committee, the fact that the committee is so objective that a player can come from nowhere at the beginning of the season and by the middle of the season become a factor and be considered, because it is objective and not subjective.
I think that's, you know, what we absolutely strive for. You know, we want to be completely fair about it. And you know, that's also part of the just kind of the random ebbs and flows of a high school football season. Sometimes it's you know, superstar heavy, and you got three or four guys that maybe are really deserving, and then sometimes it's a you know, a season where there's not necessarily these elite college prospects, which is maybe kind of how we would view superstar type guys, but maybe there's fewer of those in a given year, and it just kind of you have to wait and see who it is that steps up and has a great high school season. And Julian was that guy last year, and ended up being a college recruit as well. So he's going to get the opportunity to play at the next level as well.
Well, we talked about 2 week span. Next year, there's only going to be 1 week. Missouri is moving their season back a week. Actually going to play a football game past Thanksgiving. Evidently, the basketball and winter sports will survive in the state of Missouri if 10 teams. The football players are taken away for that extra week. And it's interesting, when I talk to people, I assumed, I'd always heard it was the basketball coaches were pushing back. And I heard that mostly from St. Louis people, because the basketball coaches kind of run the show in St. Louis. But I heard an interesting thing from someone who I'm pretty sure is in the know, that what prompted the move, or at least the discussion of the move, was the tourism industry in the state of Missouri that felt that they were taking a huge hit with the fact that families would not travel as much in the month of August because their kids had to be there for practice on July 31st this year for fall sports. I thought that was interesting.
Well, that is interesting. And I think they did have a little bit of flexibility now with not wanting to do the dome thing over a weekend. You know, that worked out really well to have, you know, the 6-7 games at the Dome on that Friday and Saturday of Thanksgiving. Now that they're not necessarily doing that, and they're they're looking at moving different championships around to different stadiums. They can do more like what Kansas did. When I first started doing this, Kansas ended the week before Thanksgiving because they all played on a Saturday and it didn't really matter. And then at some point, they moved their schedule back and ended up on the same weekend as Kansas. But the first few years, we called games on the radio. It was actually really convenient. I could call state championships in both on both sides of the state because Kansas ended a week early. And so now the Missouri has kind of gone away from that that big weekend of seven games all in one location. You know, I think they had a little more flexibility to be able to move the weekends around a little bit. If they can play them all on Saturday or Friday night, then it's not so important that it be on that holiday weekend.
Those of us who have some years behind us can remember the times when there was actually a summer and you really had limited things June, July, and August, and you
right.
Yeah, Labor Day, Memorial Day were two big events.
Yeah, that's true. There was a summer at one point in the off season. You did weights in the off season, and then you did a little camp in the summer, and that was it. But that's definitely changed. Well, one last thing I wanted to talk to you about, Nick, is something that we've talked earlier with Ryan Wallace, and we talked all throughout the show on this. It was a tough year in the off season. There were quite a few losses in the coaching community. From some, a lot of them were shockers. And West Platte lost Nate Daneman in a car accident. George Perch, a longtime assistant at Oak Grove, succumbed to cancer after a two-year battle. Tim Dorian, who coached at Schlegel and at Bishop Ward, passed away this summer. And then there's assistant coach at Lee Summit, who died last year during the season. But the one I think that is probably shocking to most and the most visible one was the passing of Eric Driscoll. And I don't know if people know details that much of it. I mean, or remember details. He was at a Coaches Association board meeting. He was on the board, and he suffered a ruptured brain aneurysm. I was there along with several other coaches, and he essentially kind of passed away right there in front of us. The coaches jumped in and did CPR and did some things that I don't know if a lot of people know, and basically kept him alive to the point where they were able to. His family was able to be with him, and that was a great thing. And Nick, you said something when we talked right when that was happening that I felt really summed up Eric in a way that it was just off the cuff we were talking, and I wanted people to know that you said this when you said to me, do you remember what you said? You felt like you lost a best friend, but you shouldn't feel that special.
Right. No, that's 100% true. You know, he was a guy that just so easy to be friends with, and I'm sure had a ton of best friends. I kind of said that tongue in cheek. Obviously, Eric and I weren't really able to hang out a lot socially. Certainly not outside of football social situations like at coaches' meetings or things like that. But man, I would have loved to. I would have loved to have, you just kind of, it gets by you, you know, and you realize that you can't get that opportunity back. And I had never met his wife. I still really haven't formally met his wife or his kids. And, after attending the memorial service and seeing some of the interviews and things she's done, it's like, man, would have loved to have dinner with that family and get to know them a little bit. But he was just a great guy, one of the best ever that I've ever worked with in the coaching community. We talked earlier about my role at the Simone Awards. The coaches here are, to a man, they're great. Everybody's great. But there are some who just get it a little bit more, and Eric Driscoll was one of those guys. And he fought for his kids. But he always was respectful about the process and never bitter if a vote didn't go his kid's way. He understood as good as anybody that there were other great football players in the city. And so just because his kid was great didn't necessarily mean that his was more deserving than another kid. And so he let those selections and those things play out to the people that whose job it was to figure out who was most deserving, and to try and do that in an unbiased way. He understood that he wasn't unbiased, that you know, that he saw his kids every day. But gosh, he was one of the greatest ever to work with, as far as the Simone Awards, and just seeing, and was always great to see him. And we're just the whole community is devastated by his loss, and as you mentioned, the so many other losses. You know, I'm friends with a couple of guys on the Liberty North staff. I live in the Northland, and that's one of the staffs that probably I just know more guys on. And Nate Daneman's brother was on that staff, and so, you know, that one was one I didn't know Nate particularly well personally, but that was another one that you know, hit pretty close to home, just because of mutual friends and relationships and such. So, yeah, it was just absolutely a tough year, and we're going to miss all those guys. And Coach Driscoll, for me personally, will be the guy that I'm absolutely going to feel a pang of loss every time we're gathered up, and I would have seen him, and he's not there. It's going to be tough.
I think the greatest thing that can be said about Coach Driscoll is what the Blue Valley community said about him, is how great he felt about all of the kids at Blue Valley, the wrestlers, the non-football players, the people in the band. He just had the respect of so many people, not just the people connected to the football program, and that's a great role model for all of us coaches.
Absolutely, and gosh, and then beyond all that, he was obviously a really, really good football coach. And I know Blue Valley's got a lot of tradition, and they've had a lot of success there. And Steve Rampe built a great program, but it's not easy to keep it rolling. And he not only kept it rolling, he took it to the next level. And so obviously, despite that laid back demeanor and the way he approached kids, and kids loved him, and you know, it just kind of shows there's more than one way to accomplish being a great coach. You don't necessarily have to be, you know, that guy that's yelling and screaming all the time, because he wasn't. But he found a way to hold his kids accountable while still being their friend. He could be a mentor and a friend and a coach all at the same time, and it absolutely does say a lot about him.
Yeah, he will be missed, and I think we'll all, as we go through this year, we'll be thinking about him, and of course Coach Daneman and Coach Perch and Coach Dorian, all the rest of the coaches that passed away. It's tough when there's five in a span of a year. Well, Nick, hey, as always, it's a good talking with you, and we will chat with you again next week.
All right. Sounds good, guys.